Hey everyone, welcome to Comedy History 101. We have a very special episode for you today on the history of Pepe the Frog, which goes along with the release of the new documentary, Feels Good, Man. Yes, you'll learn how a beloved cartoon character got co-opted by the alt-right. But before we jump into the episode, take some time to like, subscribe, and comment on Comedy History 101, wherever you get your podcast, or on our site, comedyhistory101.com. Also, on October 1st, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I'll be live streaming my solo show, Harmon Leon Infiltrates Trump America. You can catch it on twitch.tv/comedyhistory101. It features my true life exploits going out undercover in disguise and infiltrating the complete shit show, which is Trump America. And now, without further ado,
you're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
I've just always been into drawing. It takes tons of time to come up with a character. And then eventually it was Pepe. It's a happy little frog. He liked drinking and hanging out. It became boys' club.
It's one of the funniest comics of the last 10 years.
Feels good, man.
That was the frame that started it all.
And yes, what you heard there was a clip from the new documentary, Feels Good, Man, which chronicles, would you say the rise and fall of Pepe the Frog?
I think you could.
But there's a twist at the
end.
Yeah,
but don't say anything.
I know there's going to be some spoilers.
Don't say anything, yeah.
And yes, you've tuned into another episode of
Comedy History 101.
Where we school you in comedy. I am Harmon Leon. With me, of course, is Scott Colonico. Scott, when you hear the name Pepe the Frog, what comes to mind?
A blonde-haired Pepe standing at the presidential podium, ready to take over the world.
Oh, yeah. So basically what also ties in this episode is, like I said, there's a new documentary. It's called Feels Good, Man, directed by Arthur Jones. It won the awards at Sundance Film Festival, and it chronicles the life of Pepe the Frog, which is, first of all, we saw the documentary, right?
Yes, we both did. Yes, I think.
And did we love it or extremely love it?
We loved it.
I really liked it. I saw it, like, I watched it twice. Two nights in a row I watched it because I just thought it was a great documentary. Because I think what a lot of people think of Pepe the Frog, they think of the alt-right. And they don't realize that Pepe the Frog had a whole entire life of its own as a cartoon, as a beloved cartoon, as a matter of fact, before the evil internet came in and co-opted Pepe the Frog.
Poor old Pepe. Yeah, I first heard about it on another podcast, on that Reply All podcast, but this was like in 2016, maybe? So I guess maybe right when they were the Trump people were just getting used a lot in the Trump stuff, but they had reported on it back then about what was going on with Pepe.
Yes, but to know your future is to know your past. So, Scott, do you have the Wayback Portal jetpack? Is that what we're
you
calling
can call
the
it,
Wayback
Why don't you just
machine?
Call it the Comedy History Portal, Comedy History History Machine.
All right, so let's go back to around 2005 in San Francisco, where I used to live, and I was living in San Francisco in 2005. Matt Fury is the cartoonist who created Pepe the Frog, and Scott, this, are you ready for your mind to be blown?
I'm ready.
He created it while working at Community Thrift Store in the Mission District in San Francisco. He would draw it in the back office of Community Thrift. And Scott, what has two thumbs and lived right across from Community Thrift in San Francisco at one time in his life?
My grandmother.
The co-host of Comedy History 101.
No, we also figured out my grandmother used to live down the block from you. On Guerrero.
Did she?
Yeah, back in the old
days. What was her favorite burrito
place? I don't know.
Cumbras, like mine?
I think it was before they invented burritos.
Ah, yeah, because it was, just trivia, the burrito was invented in the Mission District of San Francisco. Mm,
delicious. Okay, I wish I had a burrito tonight. Well, it was more like a taco.
Yeah, so Scott, anyways, the document, what I liked about the documentary was it both kind of just how, you know, memes get co-opted on the internet, but it also brought me back to kind of like the crazy art time of San Francisco before San Francisco got co-opted by Twitter and Uber headquarters and Facebook and all that. So, and it's really funny. So Pepe the Frog was created by cartoonist Matt Bury. It was originally in a comic called Boys Club. Do you know anything about Boys Club?
I read a couple issues. It was very simply drawn. It was all black and white. That's the interesting thing, is that it was the original comic was in black and white. So Pepe himself was black and white, not colored, as he would come to be later on.
Yeah, and so this is like a very 2000 thing. It showcased a bunch of slacker roommates who were anthropomorphized,
yeah,
which means half human, half
right,
animal. And they're kind of like, you know, kind of partying, like slacker type, hedonistic, mischievous, I think would be way you'd call it. You know, fans of stoner comedies and black humor were fans of Pepe the Frog.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Pepe within his catchphrase was, should we say it together?
Feels good, man.
Yeah, so much so that I think the most iconic image at the time of Boys Club was Pepe peeing into a toilet with his pants all the way at his ankles, and he's saying the catchphrase, feels good, man.
I think they elaborate on that in the movie, right? Don't they? Wasn't it one of Matt Fury's friends who would do that?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I think it was like his roommate.
Yeah, and then his girlfriend was the butt or something.
Yeah, and another tie-in, she used to work at the Punchline Comedy Club in San Francisco. So I actually, you know, seeing the documentary, I almost positive I saw Matt Fury around San Francisco, because not only did he work at Community Thrift, but his girlfriend worked at the Punchline, and he looks like just crazy familiar when I saw the documentary.
Yeah, yes, he probably, you're hanging out with him. You didn't even know it, kind of like me and Matthew McConaughey.
Did you guys hang?
Did
you hang around?
No,
the high school
here's the thing. He was
the older we get, young, they always stay the same.
Two things, dude. So he was at he was at UT at the same time I was there, and his personal manager is a guy who went to my high school.
Oh wow, yeah, cool. So. Did you know his manager?
Yeah, I knew. I knew. No, he was in my grade. Yeah, so that was kind of.
Yeah, didn't also the I call them the bottle rocket guys.
Oh, Anderson. Yeah, yeah. They were there at UT at the same time I was, too. So I wonder if I ever saw them, but I don't remember them.
Yeah, maybe you saw them at the Belvedere.
No.
On
Fourth
Street.
I was in film school with Robert Rodriguez, so that was my one connection.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
So Pepe came about at a time right before Facebook. So Scott, do you know where Pepe achieved its first sort of notoriety? What platform?
Well, I believe that was when Matt Fury started posting pee-pee over to an internet platform known as MySpace for the kids out there.
Yeah. I mean, that's just so funny. Like, remember MySpace? Yeah. I'm almost like misty sentimental about MySpace. Just because Facebook has just turned into kind of a juggernaut of mining your data and posting right-wing propaganda, you know, but most particularly because they mine all your data and sell it. It almost makes like MySpace just seem so innocent.
Yeah, Tom.
And it was innocent. And that was kind of where Pepe started getting a following. That and Tumblr.
Tumblr, dude. Is Tumblr still around? That's still around, right?
I think it's still around. Okay.
The kids are into that. Yeah. Could,
yeah. If Tumblr's still around, just someone comments on it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
On Tumblr.
So Matt Fury created Boys Club with Microsoft Paint. And the predecessor of Boys Club, which also featured Pepe and all the characters, was a cartoon called Playtime. Mm-hmm. And so the director, Arthur Jones, said Matt was part of a community of cartoonists in the Mission during his time period, but it's an echo of the community of cartoonists from the Weirdo era. Weirdo, the comic book, noting that San Francisco, you know, cartoonist scene, comic book scene stems, you know, back to, say, you know, Robert Crumb.
Yeah.
And those type of artists.
City Lights, man.
And also just, yeah, City Light books. But also, and another thing I note in when I lived in San Francisco, there was a place called Last Gas Publishing that would publish a lot of the comic books in San Francisco and also be a distribution house. And they would have kind of what I would consider my office holiday party, because they would have a great holiday party at their warehouse. And then all these San Francisco, you know, cartoonists and book people would always be there, and free burritos.
Oh, man. Free burrito from the Mission.
Yeah. So, Scott, did the story end there? Matt puts the cartoon up on MySpace. The end?
Oh no. So Matt put a cartoon up on MySpace, and then users from a little internet board called 4chan started using the...
Wait, say 4chan once again.
4chan? What? Okay, yeah. So they started posting, but a lot of it, apparently it started out in a bodybuilding forum, where people would like be posting the pictures of Pepe, you know, with his feels good man, you know, after workouts and stuff.
Yeah, so it started popping up as memes first through the workout crew.
Yeah.
And then I think it was 2008, suddenly a Pepe song popped up on YouTube.
Hey Pepe, I heard you pull your pants down all the way to go pee.
Feels good, man.
And then there was other memes like popping up. There was one with John Goodman that said, "Feels Goodman."
That's funny. Feels good, man. Yeah, the same year in 2008, Pepe found a permanent place on the 4chan/B board. So it's kind of been described as the permanent home for Pepe memes.
Yeah, so Pepe was seen by the 4chan crowd. How would you describe the 4chan crowd? As incel? We see what happened to Pepe. What are they going to do to us?
I don't know, dude.
Don't make us into memes.
Yeah.
4chan.
The incels or whatever. Yeah. The basement people.
Yeah. So they sort of saw like Pepe. They adopted like Pepe as their mascot because it kind of summed up the drop out of society, live in your mom's basement philosophy of the acronym NEET, NEET, not in education,
right?
Employment,
training. Yep.
Yeah, so they would create, you know, memes about Pepe through that, and that's where Pepe actually first started to be actually colorized because, like you said, the cartoon was in black and white. But then it started getting a lot of popularity, and then people outside the 4chan community started adapting Pepe. You know, people, celebrities like Katy Perry and Nicki Minaj.
The normies.
The normies, yeah. As they call them. Yes, yes, yes. And what were they doing with when Pepe started becoming mainstream?
Well, that was kind of at the same time that Instagram started up. So people were posting, like in particular, what you just said, like Katy Perry posted a Pepe on Instagram. So that, you know, is still getting likes to this day.
Yeah, you saw that in the documentary. People, like, it was mostly like attractive women were kind of painting their faces green and doing like Pepe impersonations. So, Scott, how did that go over with the 4chan?
Oh man, the neat incels didn't care for that. They don't like the normies, man. They don't mix well with the normies.
and how did they react to the normies co-opting? See, there's so many co-opting Pepe in this story. How did they react to the normies co-opting Pepe?
Well, then they created like kind of evil Pepes to like kind of force the normies away from using Pepe anymore. So Pepe got kind of angry and mean.
And Nazi-fied. But again, it was like, this was before it was, well, I don't know. There's probably a crossover between alt-right and 4chan. But they started like trying to make Pepe as offensive as possible to scare off the normies.
Yeah, we don't want the normies.
As described in the documentary, it was like, it was done, you know, just kind of like, stay away from our character. You can't have it, normies. We'll Nazify it. But here's the problem with that. When you start Nazifying it, real Nazis are going to pick up on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is exactly what happened.
Yes.
So Scott, how did it create the segue? What little event happened in 2016 where Pepe took yet another 180 turn in its co-optness?
Well, one of the first things, or one of the main things that happened, is that Pepe, poor little sad Pepe, was tweeted by the presidential nominee himself, Donald Trump. A Pepe with a suit behind a presidential podium with fake blonde hair.
Yeah, so again, this is described in the documentary. The 4chan crowd saw Trump in the same way of what they were doing. They were internet trolls, and they saw Trump as the most grandiose troll of them all. Like, just for example, of how he would just troll Hillary Clinton and just say the most outrageous thing at the debates. He was a living embodiment of a Nazified outrage everyone, mm-hmm. Pepe.
Yeah.
And did Hillary Clinton help matters any?
No.
In all this?
No. That's when she declared, she called all Trump supporters, was it a bucket of deplorables?
Yeah.
And then there was an occasion. It's documented in the documentary where some supporter actually yelled out Pepe at some Clinton speech.
Yeah, and you can hear it. Yeah. It got picked up by all the news. Like, you had Rachel Maddow on MSNBC noting, you know, quoting like Pepe. But then also, kind of the image of Pepe turned. Do you know how it turned, Scott?
No, Harmon, tell me.
It went from a frown or a smile to kind of a smug little, like, smarmy
smug
kind of look.
Pepe,
on his face.
Yes, and he's got his thumb on his chin, like he's thinking about something.
Well, just sort of like he's sort of all knowing, you know, like kind of like, what? How am I offensive? Mm-hmm. I'm just a cartoon frog.
Yeah.
But around the same time, he started popping up on like the banners of the homepage of Daily Stormer, the white supremacist, you know, website.
Okay, I'm just gonna fact check you here, Harmon, because I went over there. That's gonna be in it's on my internet record now. But I did go over to this aforementioned webpage, and there is no Pepe up there.
Well, there's reasons why it's not up there, because a lawsuit ensued.
Oh, really? What happened?
One more thing before that. You're Matt Fury. You created Pepe. And before this, you didn't even really know what memes are. And then suddenly, like, your best friend gets a Pepe tattoo, like, in the 2000s. And then suddenly, Pepe the Frog becomes, like, the symbol of alt-right America in that legendary clip where Richard Spencer gets punched in the face while on camera. He's telling the news reporter who asks, what's that on your jacket? And he goes, it's Pepe the Frog. And then boom, he gets punched in the face. Yeah, classic YouTube video. Again, it's like, why is it, you know, it was just part of overall smug alt-right culture where you go, well, why is that offensive? It's just a cartoon frog. Mm-hmm. So because of this, the Anti-Defamation League in 2016 listed Matt Fury's creation as a hate symbol.
Oh, poor Pepe.
Which made Fury launch the hashtag Save Pepe campaign on Twitter, and he fought to have it taken off the ADL list, and as you saw in the documentary, not very successful.
No, actually, the ADL worked with him on the Save Pepe campaign, and I just checked today. It's still poor old Pepe is still on the he's still up there on the list.
Yeah, and the thing with, like, Matt Fury is, like, after he did Pepe, he did, like, some kid's book, you know? So he's not, like, he seems like a very nice guy. And he had a whole line of T-shirts ready to be distributed to, like, clothing stores. And then it got put on the ADL list. And there's like no, I mean, again, they had to have them all destroyed because you could say it's not evil, but you know that the alt-right people would buy the shirts.
Co-opted. They would co-opt it.
Yeah. So because of that, Matt Fury decided to kill off Pepe.
Oh, Pepe. Yeah. He died. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had him killed off in the cartoon, and his animal roommates were all there at the open casket funeral. But what finally made Fury lawyer up?
Well, that's because one of our favorite conspiracy theorists, Alex Jones from InfoWars, started using Pepe on some of his marketing material. I think it was on a T-shirt or a flag that he had him on.
It was a poster. Okay, it had Trump.
Oh, that's right. Pepe, yeah, the poster. Yeah.
Maybe Stephen Miller. I don't know.
You mean the Steve Miller from the Steve Miller Band?
No, Stephen Miller, as in he sort of looks like Pepe himself as well.
Okay.
Yeah, it was along with Alex Jones using it, and a alt-right cartoonist who created a Pepe book that was Islamic phobic, aimed at children.
Yeah, that makes you lawyer up. And then, so Matt Fury found a pro bono law firm who was going to help him out, and they jumped on board and they started defending the copyright.
Yeah. So you saw the excerpts from the deposition in the documentary. What was your take on that?
I mean,
Alex Jones, kind of fun to watch Alex
it's always Jones fun. Always fun to watch. Always fun to watch Alex Jones squirm. Him trying to be Alex Jonesy. Matt Fury trying to just, you know, answer the questions that were put to him, trying to maintain his calm. But like, I've never been deposed, so I wouldn't know how I'd handle something like that.
Yeah, Matt Fury won the copyright case again. I thought it's like sort of like how Al Capone was brought down on tax evasion charges.
Yeah.
So that's why you're not seeing it on the Daily Stormer homepage anymore.
Okay.
Because I believe they took on like 75 different people, the law firm sued like about 75 different people, including Alex Jones and the author of the Islamic phobic children's book.
Yeah.
They won the Alex Jones case. Did you ever find out how much?
I did. I was gonna. That was gonna be my trivia question. You take a
nice. Okay.
Take a guess. What do you? Because they in the documentary they never mention the amount of money.
Yeah.
But Alex Jones is always laughing it off. But what do you? How much?
Yeah. So
what do you think?
Well, let's see. So Alex Jones, how they laughed off on InfoWars was, that's like less than we spend at a strip club in a night. And then Matt Fury goes, that's more than I made over anything I've done.
Yeah.
How much? I would say $70,000.
Go lower.
Oh, 40?
Lower.
$10,000?
It was $15,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, so that's still $15,000.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And the principal.
And the principal, exactly. And no more pee-pee with Alex Jones.
Yeah, and almost no more Alex Jones.
Yeah, just too. About, man. No more Alex Jones, yeah. We'll hear about Alex Jones later on because, you know, one of the leading ways in which QAnon leaked out into the public was when somebody from InfoWars went on a QAnon guy went on to InfoWars and like did the first big interview about it. But like a non Alex Jones version of InfoWars.
So Scott, the third act of the pee-pee story, what happened in August 2019?
Well, that's when we had a bunch of protests in Hong Kong. They were protesting against the government now, but against the Chinese government's extradition treaty and other things that were going on down there. And one of the symbols that the protesters turned to use as a symbol of peaceful protest was none other than our beloved Pepe the Frog.
What?
Yes, yes. He came full circle to like peaceful, peace-loving Pepe.
Yeah, and so the symbol they used was Pepe with an injured eye being held by a young nurse with one eye covered, and it gained sympathy and international media attention. And the thing is, in Hong Kong, they weren't aware of the United States alt-right connection to Pepe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, somebody knew something. That's all I'm going to say. People don't just randomly pick this symbol and then not know. There's no way. I don't really believe that. It's a nice story.
Well, maybe that's the official story.
That's the official story. I don't really believe that. I think there's just way too much. I mean, there's no way they could not know of the usage of Pepe before that. No way.
But regardless, Fury responded in an email with a protester stating, "This is great news, Pepe, for the people."
Yeah, exactly. Well, we want Pepe to be for the people.
Yeah. So, Scott, any other takeaways on the history of Pepe the Frog, or just in general, cartoon images being co-opted along the way?
Let's see. Number one, be careful what you put on MySpace, and they make really good burritos in San Francisco.
Here, here, here. And that does it for the history of Pepe the Frog. And with that, it's time to plug away. Scott, what do you have to plug?
Well, Harmon, right now, it seems to be all film festival stuff is winding down. So what I do have is another YouTube channel and a podcast that Harmon and I sometimes do, but mostly do the YouTube channel called This is the President, where we dig into presidential history and all find all sorts of audio goodness. I just put up a video this week of the infamous showdown between the singer Eartha Kitt and Lyndon Johnson. I found a bit of audio that has been previously lost in the LBJ archives. Put that up on the internet, and you can go watch it yourself. See what Eartha Kitt said to LBJ in his very own house. That's over on the YouTube channel. This is the President.
Here, here, here. And for me, next Thursday, October 1st, 8 p.m., I'll be live streaming my solo show, Harmon Leon Infiltrates Trump America, about my true life exploits, going out undercover, in disguise, and infiltrating the complete shit show, which is Trump America, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/comedyhistory101. And as always, please take time to like, subscribe, and comment on Comedy History 101, wherever you get your podcasts, or on our site, comedyhistory101.com. And with that, thanks a lot for tuning in, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.